Welcome to the Friday, October 11th, meeting of 2024, meeting of the California Coastal Commission. I'd like to welcome everyone to our last day here in this incredible community. We've been having such a great time walking around the beach and the bay. It's just been really amazing, this area. We really enjoyed it. All right, I'd like to ask for roll call, please.
Commissioner Aguirre.
Here.
Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Commissioner Cummings.
Here.
Commissioner Escalante.
Here.
Commissioner Kunkel.
Here.
Commissioner Newsom.
Present.
Commissioner Rice.
Here.
Commissioner Williams.
Here.
Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
Chair Hart.
Present. Thank you very much. We'll now move to virtual meeting procedures.
Good morning. This Coastal Commission meeting is occurring both in person and through Zoom. This meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at calspan.org. If you have access to the internet and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not speak on an item, we recommend you use the CalSpan website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so in person through the Zoom platform or by phone. The speaker request forms may be found on the commission webpage. Paper forms and a scannable QR code for paperless submittals are available at the commission staff table just outside the meeting room. For those on Zoom, we have posted virtual hearing procedures on the commission's agenda webpage, which is a guide on providing comments via Zoom or by phone. Members of the public speaking during general public comments may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during the general public comment period will not be accepted after 9 a.m. on each day of the meeting. In order to provide the opportunity for the broadest range of public participation, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comments are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. We will accept a request to speak on an item up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have access to the internet, please go on the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 562-477-9089. Again, that number is 562-477-9089. Staff will provide you with a telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. When it is your time to address the commission, the organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone or provide instructions on how to unmute the phone. Madam Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures.
All right, thank you very much, appreciate that. All right, we're now going to open the hearing for general public comment. I understand we have about 27 speakers, is that right, Chris?
Yes, it's still 27.
All right. Can we begin with people in the room, and everyone will have 2 minutes.
And Madam Chair, if I could interject, would you wish staff to go over the agenda changes before we begin public comment?
Sure. Let's do agenda changes.
Fine.
I think there's only a couple. Go ahead.
There are only two this morning. And good morning, Chair Hart, Vice Chair Escalante, and commissioners. The agenda changes today.
Steve, we only have. Can you stop for a sec? There's something wrong with the connection.
Thanks. I think we may have some bad signals today, so please let me know if you have trouble hearing me. Okay, there are only two agenda changes today. Item 8.5A, the City of Carpinteria LCP amendment for accessory dwelling units update time extension. And item 8.5B, also a time extension for the County of Santa Barbara LCP amendment regarding the Housing Bill Implementation Ordinance. Those conclude the changes to today's agenda. That does bring us back to item 4, general public comment. And with that, I'll turn the chair back over to you, Madam Chair.
Thanks. Now we'll proceed with public comment.
Okay. For members of the public, I will be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and invite you to speak when it is your turn. Each speaker will be allowed 2 minutes to speak during general public comment. In order to allow for live video testimony on Zoom, we will be bringing you in as panelists. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload. This may take a moment. To speed up this process, we will bring several people in at a time, but please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you'll be moved back to attendee mode. For members of the public present in the room, I will call your names in the order that they appear on our sign-up list. When you hear your name, please line up behind the podium and announce yourself with your name when you approach to speak. Several helpful tips. There's a raise your hand function that will help us find you in the attendee list. If you're using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you are participating by Zoom, you should see a button on your Zoom screen. If you have signed up to speak for this item and are able to do so, please raise your hand now. When it is your time to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. You can unmute yourself on a phone by dialing *6. Please remember to state your name for the record. So first in the room, we have Carol Carriage, followed by Mark Raniak, Ken Lamer, and then Don Schmitz. So Carol Carriage. And then please press the button on the mic to turn it on. There you go.
Should it be green? I guess not. Good morning. My name is Carol Carriage, live in Del Mar. And as you probably know, many of our state's coastal towns have already experienced sea level rise along with hillside damage from climate-driven, unpredictable storms causing multiple problems such as flooding, mudslides, groundwater pooling, disruptions of underground drainage, sinkholes, erosion hazards, and major property damage. Some of these conditions have already occurred on our hillside and beach of Del Mar. Given this information, planning a tunnel under the Del Mar hillside is a huge risk. Considering putting lives, homes, train passengers, cargo, and essential military supplies at risk by planning a double-track tunnel under an already vulnerable hillside by increasing its burden with an increase of up to 90 passenger train trips and 11 freight train trips within 24 hours, seems to me to be quite dangerous. Along with these issues, I believe the Coastal Commission should exercise its authority to reopen and reconsider the San Dieguito Bridge and Events Platform Project as part of its review of the Losan Realignment Project. I believe it's time for federal, state, regional, and local governments to work together to find a more safe and manageable option for the railroad transportation and to avoid vulnerable California coastal hillsides and beach areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Raniak, Ken Lamer, and then Donald Schmitz, or Don Schmitz, sorry.
I think there are some slides I have, just a couple. Okay, sorry, they're a little small. Good morning, my name is Mark Raniak. I'm a member of the San Diego Embarcadero Coalition. The intent of my public comment today is to illustrate how the port is attempting to use tiering improperly for the San Diego Central Embarcadero Planning District. As part of the PMPU process, the PMPU omitted the current Seaport San Diego project, instead used the 2016 version, claiming that detailed plans are not important. However, per code, the proponent is not excused from adequately analyzing foreseeable significant environmental effects of the project and does not justify deferring such analysis to a later tier EIR or negative declaration. On this slide, is the 2016 Central Embarcadero project from the final program EIR. Also shown, and that's 8 years out of date, also shown are estimates of the annual metric tons of CO2 equivalent gas, greenhouse gas emissions for the square footages in the plan using the Cool Climate Network calculator developed at UC Berkeley. The carbon footprint for the project is over 9,000 metric tons annually for the 1.3 million square feet of new buildings in the PMPU, replacing the small amount of 124,000 square feet of existing buildings that are to be demolished. The next slide shows the recent project description, the port's developer's most recent project description, totaling over 2.7 million square feet of built area. To put that in perspective, the existing giant San Diego Convention Center is smaller at 2.6 million square feet, and the entire IQHQ development, plus the new Navy building and proposed Fairmont Manchester Hotel, is 2.2 million square feet. This horrendous, huge proposal by the port's developer is mind-boggling when compared to the way the public uses and enjoys the existing Seaport Village and surrounding parks and open space. As shown, the estimated carbon footprint for the actual
plan, your time has expired,
is 35,000 metric tons annual.
Thank you.
This is over almost 300% increase in the carbon footprint of the existing.
Okay, thank you so much for this. Appreciate it.
Ken Lamer, Don Schmitz, and then Daryl Gale. Ken Lamer. Not seeing Ken Lamer, so Don Schmitz.
Someone's coming up, Chris.
Yeah, after Don Schmitz.
Oh, I see, okay. Mr. Schmitz, come on up. Good morning.
Morning, Commissioners. Chair Hart, pursuant to our email correspondence, I did not bring multiple presenters on this topic, and I'll keep it to 4 minutes if that's still permissible.
That's fine.
Okay, so good morning, Commissioners. My name is Don Schmitz. I'm here on behalf of Smart Coast California. And as a follow-up to the presentation that you had up in Monterey, and the clicker's not working, next slide, please, where the working group had brought forward to you the analysis that had been done on bringing neighborhood solutions to the issue of sea level rise. There was some testimony by some folks who are very comfortable with the Coastal Act as it is right now and the way things have been coming forward and that it's working. We respectfully disagree. There's a heartbreaking amount of armoring that has occurred on the coast of California, and that's before high levels of sea level rise actually started to manifest. Next slide, please. Is it working now? There we go. Now, Manager Treat definitely can be very effective in certain areas. This is Surfers Point up in Ventura, and there was a RV parking lot in that area that was relocated further landward and will allow sea level rise to be accommodated and created a beautiful footpath and recreational opportunities. But in the more urbanized areas of the coast of California, where pursuant to Section 30253 of the Coastal Act and the California Constitution, we have to allow people to have armoring to protect their homes. If you have manage or treat, you're going to get what I call sawtooth development. It's going to not result in healthy beaches and healthy communities. There are other protection options, and that's something that the working group, and again, we were very honored, along with the Surf Rider, Smart Coast California, was part of the conversations with the working group and the neighborhood approach that was brought to you up in Monterey. And those options include dune restoration, living shorelines, artificial reefs, kelp frustration. There's tools in the toolbox. And so one of the things where you've seen this already manifest is on a Cardiff State Beach down that was approved by the Coastal Commission. And yes, a shoreline protection device was put in to protect the highway, but it was then turned into a living dune complex, which is some pictures that you can see here before and after, enhancing habitat and still protecting the infrastructure. Now, this is more of a macro level project, but the neighborhood approach that was being deliberated upon by the working group and brought forward to the commission is something that can be more micro up and down the coast. This is another example down on Narrow Neck Artificial Reef in Gold Coast in Australia. Here's a familiar scene that you've seen before. The beach was eroding. They were building revetments to protect the beach. They installed an artificial reef down there. And this is after storms in 2001, after the reef had been installed. The beaches were accreting. The wildlife loved it. The surfers loved it because they can be designed to improve surfing conditions. Another thing that shows great promise is reef balls, and they can protect the shoreline, as you can see from this picture down in the Caribbean. But reef balls, They do exist here in California. In fact, the Songs mitigation down at San Onofre was replaced with permits from the Coastal Commission installing these reef balls because the marine wildlife loves them. So you get a win-win situation. You get enhancement of the habitat and you get protection of the beaches. And there's a very exciting project coming down the pike. You may have heard about it already down in Oceanside, whereupon they're going to do an artificial headlands project where they're creating these artificial headlands, which will be parks with recreational opportunities. Then there will be beach nourishment, and they are putting an artificial reef out in front of the beach to hold the sand. And of course, all of these projects will come to you. There's lots of opportunities with homeowners associations and communities to do this. And in fact, I'm pretty excited myself because, as you know, I represent people up and down the coast, and I'm already bringing these forwards as options to traditional armory. So with that, I thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Daryl Gale, and then we'll move to Zoom speakers, starting with Angelina Neglia, Lauren Siegel, and then Barry Cassily.
Hello, I'm Daryl Gale. Okay, so we'll return to 2 minutes, please. Got me?
And then if you could bring the mic down to your mouth. There
okay.
You go.
So I don't understand how this commission got the authority to tell Edison to dump their 1,800 tons of hot forever nuclear waste on the beach next to the San Onofre station, but, you know, not the responsibility. People believed all of Edison's promises, that it was safe and okay to do so indefinitely. Well, why not tell Edison to start digging a big hole in the desert and pay Newsom so he'd be on board? Or tell Edison to use their connections, influence, and major profits to put their toxic radioactive crap on the other side of the freeway, away from king tides, sea level rise, and tsunamis. That would buy us a little bit of time. I was there at Chula Vista where Steve Padilla promised to work on moving it off the beach. Well, we're waiting still. So, all just one cracked nuclear spewing container would be an evacuation nightmare. So I heard yesterday that we should, you know, we, the citizens should call or, you know, email the NRC. So this is a Geiger counter, but let's pretend it's a phone. Hello, NRC. Hi, I'm a citizen representing the 7 million people who live near San Onofre, and we've got a leaking canister. Would you hurry up and come over here? And please make a repository real quick and just get the stuff off the beach for us, because we're all going to be contaminated really quickly. And so is the area and all the businesses and all the tourists and all the marine life. So that's all I would like to tell you. Thank you for listening.
All right, thank you. Moving on to Zoom speakers. Angelina Neglia, followed by Lauren Siegel, and then Barry Cassily. Angelina?
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for everything that you do, and there are so many challenges. I am from the...
Your sound is not working.
Oh,
can you
dear.
Hold on one sec?
Okay.
So if you could just start at the... Take it from the top. You'll have 2 minutes.
Oh, and I'll be really quick, sorry. Anyway, I'm the head of the Coalition for Safer Trains, and we started in Del Mar. And since we've started and gone through the whole NOP process with Sandag and realized the disproportionate of destruction of Del Mar for their options B and C, our option A actually made it to the shortlist. But what arose out of that was their options B and C are totally all in the floodplain, which I'm not going to regurgitate Carol's presentation. But we can't ignore sea level rise and the storms and the water runoff in our very fragile cliff, our eroding bluffs, and the topography of Del Mar. So we've come up with other alignments, not only an option A that is outside of, it's all on public land, no eminent domain, not in the floodplain, but we're also have come up with three alignments that go down by the five. And I can always send those to you at another time. But the reason I'm here today is to make sure that we have those alignment options as feasible options. We need the San Diego Bridge reassessed correctly, because the EIR and that passed over a decade ago. And if that bridge gets put through, it really pretty much demolishes any of alignments that could be other options down the five, or it could be one of our options is tunneling under the river and under the lagoon at the very southernmost piece. And that would, if that bridge happens, which went through not correctly because the event platform was attached to the EIR and that was submitted as an existing structure. And there is no event platform at the fairgrounds. And so that thing needs to be revisited and put on hold, or it should be part of the overall Losan Railroad realignment project completely, because we need to actually have a clean slate and do this properly for future generations. And that's why I'm here today, and I can send you our alignments and background info. It would take hours to get through, but I can send that to you. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for bearing with us. Lauren Siegel, and then we'll actually move to one more in-person speaker, Catherine Rhodes, and then we'll go to Barry Cassily. So Lauren, go ahead.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Lauren Siegel, and I live in the coastal zone of Venice. I wanted to share my experience with you. Venice, as all of Los Angeles, has a housing shortage. I have a garage that has plenty of space to turn into an ADU. I can add a one-bedroom apartment for my adult daughter who's returning to Venice. There is no major construction needed, no new structure, foundation, nothing. I have already submitted my plans to building and safety. They have been signed off from every department, except I need a coastal development permit for the ADU. I'm expected to spend approximately $50,000 for the permitting and consultant fees, as well as wait many months before I can get approval from Coastal. And the Coastal Commission will eventually approve my ADU. ADUs don't get appealed and there is no coastal impact. Here in Venice, 90% of CDP applications are to create an ADU, yet the Coastal Commission insists on this extra money to be spent. If I lived less than 1 mile north in Santa Monica's coastal zone of Ocean Park, which, like Venice, does not have an approved land use plan, I could get a waiver. Santa Monica has the right to build a small, affordable ADU unit with cheap and quick waivers. However, in Venice, I need to file for a CDP, spend $50,000 again on permits and consultants. Where is the equity? Where is the fairness? When will you make it easier, faster, and cheaper to add additional affordable housing in Los Angeles? Let me add an affordable unit to the Venice community. Allow more affordable housing in Venice. Allow me to build an ADU in the coastal zone with a CDP waiver. Coastal staff wants this. City planning wants this. Council District 11 wants this. Please make this a priority. Allow ADUs to be permitted with a CDP waiver, like Santa Monica, our neighbor.
All right, thank you. Catherine Rhodes, and then back to Zoom with Barry Cassily, Christoph Jansen, and then Frank Murphy. Catherine Rhodes.
Hello, Catherine Rhodes. I'm a civil and environmental engineer here in Pacific Beach. First, I wanted to say it's really good to have both Gretchen Newsom and Mayor Paloma Aguirre from San Diego on the California Coastal Commission. Yay, great news. I came here because I saw yesterday's discussion on getting a state and federal state of emergency order for the Tijuana River Valley, and also to thank Mayor Aguirre for her leadership on this issue. As far as I know, you need our Governor Newsom to declare California state of emergency before President Biden can declare federal state of emergency. So it seems like Governor Newsom is sabotaging our beaches, and I don't know why. No clue. Since the election is in 25 days, this is what I'm asking of our San Diego people. Please ask our Vice President Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to come to the border and say they are in favor of cleaning up the area, plus to talk about the 2,200 Border Patrol agents that were part of the bipartisan border bill that would be able to staff the port of entries. Our Vice President Kamala Harris needs help to show she is doing something on the border. And I know our Mayor Todd Gloria is her friend. Maybe he could actually call her and say, come here, please. It'll be good for her. There are so many lanes that are closed right now in the San Ysidro port of entry due to lack of Border Patrol staff. Other California ports of entries are only open from 6 to 10 p.m. due to lack of Border Patrol staff. And that And that results in a lot of air pollution there on the coast because of the lines. All we have to do is open up the lanes, and they won't open up the lanes because we don't have Border Patrol agents to actually staff the lanes to open them up. So when I talked to the EPA Region 9 Superfund staff, they told me to have the state of California EPA ask for a Superfund national priority list. So if you guys are ever talking about a Superfund site, I would say please communicate with the state EPA. Thank you.
Thank you. Barry Cassily, Christoph Jansen, and then Frank Murphy. Barry Cassily, you can unmute now.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Barry Cassily, and I live in Venice. I would like to say a few words about accessory dwelling units. Currently, ADU permits are processed in Santa Monica's Ocean Park Coastal Zone with a coastal development permit waiver. An example is the waiver granted for the conversion of a 560-square-foot garage into a 996-square-foot two-story ADU at 503 Ashland in Santa Monica. A waiver is a one-page form, requires payment of a nominal fee, and is processed concurrently with the building department application for these small projects. Ocean Park and Venice were originally one community. They have identical development patterns and abut each other today. Santa Monica, like Los Angeles, does not have an approved local coastal program. It has an approved land use plan, but no approved implementation plan, as coastal jurisdictions Santa Monica and Venice have identical status. In Venice, unlike Santa Monica, the Coastal Commission requires a full coastal development permit for ADUs. CDPs are obviously incomparably more expensive and time-consuming process than waivers. Commissioners, I submit to you that this dissimilar treatment of similar adjoining communities is more than unfair. It is a gross violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, the 14th Amendment. As the housing crisis is no less serious in Venice and Ocean Park and has led to the displacement of nearly everyone except the most privileged from both coastal communities, I implore the commission to instruct staff to work expeditiously to allow the city of Los Angeles, like Santa Monica, to begin processing ADUs without requiring expensive, time-consuming CDPs. Not only would this encourage the construction of these affordable market-rate housing units, it would establish similar equitable regulations for similar adjoining communities. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. Next, Christoph Jansen, Frank Murphy, and then Sherry Flumerfeld.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Christoph Jansen, and I'm a long-term resident in Venice. I work as an architect and urban planner and also have a practice here in Venice. Like the previous presenters, I would like to talk to you about the process for permitting an ADU in the coastal zone. All of my clients who are looking to add an additional unit on their property are homeowners who are looking to house either adult children, aging parents, or are simply looking for an additional income to be able to afford to stay in their homes. The CDP process for ADUs is incredibly bureaucratic, extremely complicated, and beyond the ability of most people to understand. Just to submit an application will cost about $20,000 in my experience. Most require a consultant to guide them through the process, which will easily cost an additional several thousand dollars. Even I am extremely frustrated handling the process for my clients. As I see it, the CDP process for ADUs is unnecessarily expensive, time-consuming, and incredibly wasteful for everyone. Imagine how the coastal staff can spend their time focusing on important issues such as climate change, rising sea levels, as we heard before, instead of processing CDP applications for ADUs. We all know that ADUs don't get appealed. We know that there is no coastal impacts from ADUs. We know that we have been successfully building ADUs in Venice for more than 5 years. Imagine the reduction in bureaucracy for the Coastal Commission as well as the City of Los Angeles Planning Department. I urge you to change the permitting process for ADUs in the coastal zone to a coastal development permit waiver. Save time, save money, save resources. Your staff would thank you. The City of LA would thank you. Council District 11 would thank you. Homeowners would thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, Frank Murphy, followed by Sherry Flumerfelt, and then Susan Simon. Frank Murphy.
Yes, Frank Murphy. I feel that it would be a legitimate summary or expectation of your mission that the coastal communities be inclusive of all people, including those of lesser means. The numbers from 1990 to 2020 represented here are the realization of firmly entrenched housing policies enacted by the Coastal Commission. We know that those of lesser means, no matter what their demographic, are not welcome in the coastal zone, evidenced by the tracing of exclusion of our Black and Brown neighbors over the past 30 years. The city of LA's coastal zone from 1990 to 2020 lost 23% of its Black population, lost 21% of its Hispanic population. My community of Venice lost 45% of our Black and 34% of our Hispanic populations. From 90 to 20, the world population increased 46%, California 33%, while the city of LA coastal zone and Venice decreased 5.5 and 4.2 respectively. From 90 to 20, California housing increased 29%, city of LA coastal zone 3.13, Venice 5.22. The advancements on all these fronts from 60 to 90 were far more inclusionary, equitable, and saw an equilibrium in housing availability, the envy of the country, completely reversed from 90 to 20, completely. These are phenomena that occurred as a result of policy, your policy. My question to you is this: are these the results you intended? And if so, why isn't that clearly stated? If not, what are the efforts, if any, to mitigate these results, providing more housing? Thank you.
Thank you. Sherry Flumerfelt, Susan Simon, and then Denise Carrejo. Sherry Flumerfelt.
I had a slideshow that I had sent in.
Yes, we're bringing it up.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Sherry Flumerfelt, and I'm the executive director of the Western Flyer Foundation. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak today to share our story and work, which we are grateful to the Coastal Commission for supporting through a past Whale Tail grant. Next slide. The Western Flyer is an old Monterey fishing boat made famous in 1940 when author John Steinbeck and marine biologist Ed Ricketts took it on a six-week trip to Mexico's Gulf of California to collect marine specimens. Next slide. When they returned, when they returned, they published Sea of Cortez and The Log from the Sea of Cortez, which became one of Steinbeck's classics and which has inspired many people to study marine science and conservation. Next slide. The boat, the Western Flyer, has become an icon of American literature. Next slide. I have a lot of slides here. And after its famous expedition, it continued a life of fishing, disappeared, and eventually fell into disrepair. Next slide. In 2015, our founder, John Gregg, bought it and launched a seven-year restoration project with the goal of putting it back into service for marine science and education. And then he donated the boat to our nonprofit. Next slide. Last fall, we had a big homecoming celebration. Western Flyer returned to Monterey after 75 years with thousands of people who joined us. Next slide. And it's been in Moss Landing ever since. Next slide. We've built a laboratory in the fish hold with funding from the California Coastal Conservancy. Next slide. And our mission is to stir curiosity through marine research, education, and a blend of science and art. Next slide. Since January alone, we've served more than 1,000 students, 400 on the docked flyer, thanks in part to a Whale Tail grant. Next slide. We've also recently launched our at-sea programs, taking 2 and 4 year students out. All our programs are free and paid for through grants and donations. Next. I just wanted to thank you again for your support and invite you all to come visit the Western Flyer anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Susan Simon, Denise Carrejo, and then Mary Frances Carrejo. Susan Simon. Susan, you're in as a panelist and you can unmute.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Susan Simon, co-chair of the Embarcadero Coalition, which is concerned with the massive proposed and approved overdevelopment of Port of San Diego managed public lands that will be facilitated by the port's Port Master Plan update slash amendment, which the Embarcadero Coalition asked coastal commissioners to deny in total when it is presented to them. Some of our specific concerns include the Port of San Diego is trading in our beautiful waterfront for a sea of hotels, retail spaces, new docks, and large yacht berthing for use mostly by non-Californians. All the current and proposed development will dramatically decrease the number of scenic views, even from the water's edge. And many of the view corridors claimed by the PMPU don't exist now and would be dramatically lesser still after build-out. The PMPU that has been approved by San Diego Port Commissioners should not be approved by you, as it omits proposed redevelopment in entire districts that currently have enormous development projects underway. 40% of the San Diego Port-managed lands are not included in this document. The PMPU was not lawful, as it did not include projects that were known to the port in its environmental analysis. Even without these projects, 80% of evaluated criteria was found to be significant and unavoidable, or significant after the port's potential mitigation measures. The port dismissed these findings, citing job creation as offsetting these major concerns. However, most of the jobs would be temporary, but the environmental impacts would be permanent. San Diego Port's PMPU, PMPA misleads the public and coastal commissioners by consolidating previously separate categories into a single category to provide the appearance of increased free and open public space. The Port of San Diego purposely tries to confuse coastal commissioners and the public of the purpose of the PMPU by alternating its names and function. Is it a replacement of the PMP or an amendment? It doesn't conform to the current PMP's definitions, structure, or in any other way resemble the current PMP in many categories, but creates new ones instead. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Denise Correjo, followed by Mary Frances Correjo, and then Marie Correjo. Denise Correjo. Denise, you should be able to unmute. There you go.
Hi, yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Wonderful. Thank you for hearing us today. This is regarding item number F11A today. And
we can actually, you'll be able to speak during that item. I'll actually move you to that item. It's a specific item on the agenda. You'll be able to speak during that public comment, but not during general public comment. We'll move you over there and come back to you.
The reason why is because I read that only the applicants can talk during the meeting and not the appellants. So I just wanted to clarify that we would have time to speak, because I read in the notes on the...
Excuse me, ma'am. This is the chair. I can let you know that you definitely will be able to speak. Item 11A is a... hold on a sec. Let me just pull it up. Okay, so... Item 11A is an appeal, so you'll be able to speak if you objected to the item at the local level. I don't know if you did do that, but we normally have a record of that. So when we get to that item, you'll be able to speak. But in any event, if you want to speak on a specific item, you're only able to do that when the item is called.
Okay. My mom, Mary Correa, is next in line. Is it okay if she can speak, just a general comment?
Sure, as long as she's not speaking about that specific item.
Yeah, she just wants to do a general comment.
No,
about...
of course. Okay. Great, we'll pull her up. Thanks.
Okay.
So Mary Frances Correjo, you should be able to unmute now. And I see that they're joining via phone. Or is it the other Mary Correjo? There's two Mary Correjos. You should be able to unmute. You may need to press *6 to unmute. I'm not seeing any movement from the phone, so actually we'll come back. We're gonna there's the phone.
Hello?
Okay. Hi.
Sorry, my mom's 88 and she was walking to the phone. She had to go to the restroom. Sorry. Okay, here's my mom.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay. My name is Mary Correjo. I am 88 years old, and we do not want the 5G cell pole in our front yard. I am a homeowner here for 24 years.
Excuse me, ma'am. So, ma'am, excuse me.
Yes?
So this item is an agendized item, and we don't accept general comments during general public comment on a specific item. If you all objected to this at the local level, then we'll hear from you when we call that item 11A.
Let me call my daughter real quick. Denise, get over here real
thank
quick.
You. All right, Chris, let's move on to the next.
Okay, moving on. Dan Stejink, Maura O'Neill, and then Marissa Sullivan. Dan, you're being moved in right now. Yes. And then Dan, when you're able to, please unmute and begin.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Excellent. I'm speaking today on the Pacifica Quarry mitigation appeal that was heard 2 weeks ago and has not been adjudicated yet in Pacifica. Next slide. Pacifica Quarry meets all four National Register of Historic Places and California Register of Historic Places criteria. Next slide. The city has no record of any Native American artifacts or peoples being found in the quarry, but I've spoken with 15 different past wastewater treatment employees who said that between 16 and 30 feet deep in the construction of the Clara Creek water treatment plant, they found many Native American artifacts. Next slide. These are Ohlone people. Temigtaq was the village there. Next slide. Here's the location of the artifacts and the contractors involved, found between 18 and 30 feet deep. Next slide. Temigtaq is a recognized quarry band from 1776. They've got specific genealogy charts, Catholic Charities does. Next slide. There's a Pacifica archaeologist named Shirley Dry that's got extensive video on YouTube about artifacts she's found in the Pacifica quarry. Next slide. That's her right there. She is now deceased, but was a local hero. Next slide. Planning Commissioner Todd Bray wrote a letter in 2010 talking about many artifacts that have been found in the quarry during the construction of the Clara Creek plant. Next slide. Here's a 1963 excavation by Zenon Porecki that found what was allegedly the best condition native fishing net ever found in California. Next slide. And here's the Ohlone fishing net that was found in Berkeley that allowed them to get on the National Historic Register site. Thank you very much.
Okay. Maura O'Neill, followed by Marissa Sullivan, and then Diana Sandoval. Maura O'Neill.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Maura O'Neill. I'm a policy analyst and advocate for Better Neighbors LA, a coalition of hosts, tenants, housing activists, and community members who conduct data analysis and research on the short-term rental industry. We seek to regulate short-term rentals to preserve long-term housing. We believe true home sharing and hosted only short-term rentals is the best way to balance affordable access to the coast for visitors and long-term residents. Today, I'd like to highlight a recent LA Times article that we also emailed to you all. On Tuesday, the Times reported on how SDRs have hollowed out the community of Cayucas, a town of 2,500 people, which now has 350 short-term rental licenses. For every 7 residents in Cayucas, there's 1 unit of housing being converted into tourist accommodations. These SDRs are also largely more expensive than existing overnight accommodations. The average SDR accommodation for 1 to 2 people in the county that Cayucas is in, San Luis Obispo, will cost a prospective tourist around $200 a night, according to forthcoming data analysis by Nicholas Durago at UCLA. Existing overnight accommodations average around $140 per night. The proliferation of more expensive SDRs threatens coastal access for persons of low to moderate income. The result is that a formerly vibrant beach community has seen an exodus of residents. slowly turning into a ghost town where homes that could house residents now serve as short-term rentals for guests. This is one example of how a wave of SDRs has negatively impacted communities in the coastal zone. As the Coastal Commission considers ordinances to regulate short-term rentals in the future, Better Neighbors LA urges you all to consider strengthening proposed regulations in the coastal zone to permit hosted-only rentals to protect coastal access and communities. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next, Marisa Sullivan, Diana Sandoval, and then Rita McDonald. Marisa Sullivan.
Good morning to you all, the Coastal Commission. I appreciate this opportunity to speak. That's always helpful. And also to listen to the other stories of the concerns that we all have regarding our oceans and where we live. I'm here just to thank the Coastal Commission for their following through and helping us with holding Sable / Exxon accountable for their activities of restarting a pipeline that for many years, many of us have been doing the best we can to, do something about the damage that occurred in 2015. So I just want to thank the commission and hope that and encourage them to continue to do the good work that they're doing in being a voice for the Chumash people and supporting us in the best that we can within what is a court system and a litigation and such. We don't have the resources that many of the state agencies and the certainly the extractive industries do, and the people that only look at our earth and our ocean as a resource. The Chumash people ourselves have had that experience of being in the way and then being removed. So I really want to just thank you on behalf and continue to, I'm looking forward to them being a continued voice for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Diana Sandoval, Rita McDonald, and then Aaron Berry. Diana, go ahead.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Diana Sandoval, and I'm here to notify the enforcement team that a public equestrian hiking trail at 3215 Foothill Road in Carpinteria remains blocked and has yet to be recorded. Santa Barbara County Planning Development issued several coastal development permits without ensuring the permit conditions were met. The public trail easement remains blocked in clear violation of the Coastal Act and the conditions set forth in several CDPs. The fact is, a 15-foot wide public equestrian and hiking trail easement was required to be recorded prior to land use clearance, yet this condition was not met. In June of 2024, I filed a complaint with Santa Barbara County regarding the blocked public trail. A month later, the county opened and closed the violation case for noncompliance with permit conditions on the same day. Let me repeat, open and close a violation on the same day for noncompliance. Following that, Planning and Development denied my on-site public records request for the violation and claimed that the violation was quickly closed because there was no violation and that the public trail easement was recorded. However, the fact remains, as of this morning, there is no record of the mandated 15-foot public trail easement on the Santa Barbara County official records website. This is in direct violation of the permit conditions, resulting in the limiting of public access, blocking of public recreation, and the obstruction of public resources, all in violation of the Coastal Act. Santa Barbara County has a history of exempting this property from local, state, and federal regulations. Therefore, I urge the Commission enforcement team to issue a notice of violation to ensure the public trail is properly recorded and accessible to the public, as mandated in several CDPs. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Rita McDonald, Aaron Berry, and then Margaret Molloy. Rita McDonald. Rita, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Perfect. My name is Rita McDonald. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of the Samuel Lawrence Foundation, a 501c nonprofit located in San Diego County. I'd like to address some misinformation. One of the things that the Coastal Commission thinks, some of the commissioners mentioned, is that certain things are not, the Coastal Commission doesn't have jurisdiction with respect to the nuclear waste that's stored up in San Onofre, and also the idea of what's happening in the Tijuana River Basin. But we actually have a conflict, a constitutional conflict with the state of California Constitution. And from a legal basis, and at least in my opinion, we do have a constitutional basis, both Article 10, which addresses water rights and public access, but also establishes the foundational principle that the use of California's natural resources, including coastal and marine environments, is subject to the regulation and to protect public rights and the public interest. And in addition to that, we also have in the California Constitution, Article 11. So both Article 10 and Article 11, which provides counties and local jurisdictions the authority to enact ordinances related to land use, zoning, and environmental protection. And I think because we have these constitutional protections, we have an opportunity to dispute with the federal government what they're doing. And I really like to see the California Coastal Commission step up and get the California Department of Justice involved, especially in both the Tijuana River Valley as well as the new.
Thank you. Next, Aaron Berry, Margaret Molloy, and then I'll go back and call names that we haven't been able to find. Aaron Berry. There you go.
Good morning. I am Aaron Berry, president of Smart Coast California. As you're aware, Smart Coast California was founded about 5 years ago to accumulate and share information about sea level rise and possible responses to it with all policymakers up and down the coast. Last month, we were incredibly excited to present our 2024 One California, One Coast Policy Summit. We had representatives joining us from all over California as we examined the current state of research and adaptation to climate change and sea level rise. Over the last 4 years, we've seen modeling of our shared future get more sophisticated. We expect ever more accurate projections as our shared comprehension of the various components of climate change and sea level rise improves. One of our summit panels included three members of the California Coast Commission's executive staff who provided information on sea level rise policy guidance and an update on projects. Specifically, I would like to thank Madeline Cavallari, your deputy executive director, Kelsey Ducklow, your coastal resilience coordinator, and Aaron Prehler, your statewide planning manager. We were so grateful the California Coast Commission joined our roster of summit speakers for the second year. As you know, we advocate for neighborhood scale solutions because every city and region will experience differing impacts, and we need to consider a variety of solutions. We look forward to continuing our work on the ground and with future policy summits as communities move to adapt to the new reality as it unfolds. But we would really like to thank you for your support in our summits. Have a great day.
Thank you. Next, Margaret Molloy, and then I'll call names that we haven't been able to find. I'll give us a second to reset the timer. There you go. Margaret Molloy.
Hi, can you make it full screen? Okay, thank you. So I want to talk about exemptions and serial exemptions that are being issued by the commission for a single property, which in the context of what a development is described as under section 13253, it's a change of intensity of use. So cumulative impact of these successive exemptions are not being assessed evidently. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Sorry. They're not noticed. Next slide, please. Next. Sorry, I think there's probably a loop issue. So Mr. Hudson said on April 10th, 2024, that the exemption process is a threshold determination, as I'm, and he says based on section 13253, as I'm stating, when the commission issues successive exemptions, where is the analysis for adverse impacts and cumulative impacts? Next slide, please. There's also a very significant issue with the lack of public notice. Next slide, please. Hello? There's the definition, any improvement to a structure which changes the intensity of use of the structures. Next slide, please. Cora Lambert is a serial violator in Venice. These are five buildings, all within the dual permit coastal zone area. Next slide, please. He bought the property on 7/29/2015. Next slide, please. Here are the successive CEXs. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Oh, wait, actually, go back, that one. So to be important, this was denied because the plans show the entire ground floor is existing retail. Next slide, please. That's extremely important. Keep going, please. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. You can clearly see this is a residential building, entirely residential. Keep going, please. Keep going. Go all the way to the end, but slowly. One, yeah, keep going. He's telling us that he's done a $10 million renovation. Keep going. Keep going. There will be only two residential units left. Keep going. This is a violation. And due process. And the commission cannot facilitate bad actors. Please. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Now, with the names we haven't been able to find, we had Ken Lamer, who is attending in the room, apparently. And then Tim Bonefeld, Noah Suarez-Sykes, Andrea Luker, and Cindy Abbott. If you've heard your name, please raise your hand in the Zoom meeting. Again, that's Tim Bonefeld, Noah Suarez-Sykes, Andrea Luker, and Cindy Abbott. I see a couple hands raised. LOCAC, I'm allowing you to speak. You can unmute and please state your name. The CAC name.
Okay, sorry. Andrea Luker. Zoom workplace is giving me fits and starts, but this is me. Thanks. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Perfect. Good. Andrea Luker, React Alliance. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan grassroots organization working to educate the public on the impacts of offshore wind. Very frequently, there's new information becoming available about the impacts to the marine environment from offshore wind activities. We know on the East Coast, who is ahead of the West Coast in development, offshore wind development has seen an incredible uptick in cetacean deaths in areas of offshore wind activity. In fact, since January of this year, the cetacean death count is approaching 200 animals on the East Coast. In spite of this, the West Coast continues to move forward, issuing permits to predominantly foreign offshore wind companies, citing stale data regarding impacts. React Alliance has sent the Coastal Commission a number of new studies and data regarding these impacts. For example, there's a very interesting study that was done by a retired Rutgers professor that shows a significant correlation between offshore wind survey vessels and whale death on the East Coast. The professor asks for further study on the correlation by NOAA in an attempt to update the data that NOAA has been using. To that point, on the West Coast, we are keeping record of cetacean death near offshore wind activities. To date, our citizen scientists have recorded 7 deaths, 3 whales and 4 dolphins since April of this year in areas of high decibel site surveys. As a reminder, the Coastal Commission approved the use of 228 decibels for these site surveys, yet Atlas Wind printed a public flyer that they are using up to 240 decibels. A rocket launch is 180 decibels and lasts for a short time. The offshore wind companies are blasting the water with up to 240 decibels for hours at a time. Let's go back to the precautionary principle on the West Coast, look at all the data related to impacts from offshore wind activities. Please keep in mind the mandate of the Coastal Commission is to protect and conserve our coastal resources. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we had one other hand raised under the name Aaron Berkson, but we didn't see a sign up under that name. But if someone else by a different name that we called is with you, please go ahead. Aaron Berkson, if you can unmute.
Hi. Good morning, commissioners. I appreciate you listening. Can you hear me?
Yes. Could you please state your name?
My name is Aaron Berkson.
We didn't receive a sign up for you for this item.
Did you receive a sign up for Tim Bonefeld?
Tim Bonefeld, yes.
Yeah, I'm his wife. I'm calling on his behalf.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I appreciate you listening. I've been a Venice resident for 30 years and own a retail store in Venice named Borough. Borough is the oldest independently owned retail store on Abercrombie Boulevard, and I've been on the street since 1999. Currently, I live with my husband and 14-year-old daughter in a smaller 900-square-foot house. We want to stay in Venice indefinitely and have plans to expand our house modestly and build an ADU on our property. My husband, Tim, is an architect and tells me that we can do an addition to our house with a coastal development permit waiver. He says that the waiver will not be expensive and can be processed quickly. He says, however, that the ADU requires a full coastal development permit. He says that the coastal permit is incomparable in terms of cost to the waiver and it requires much more work and will take over a year. This is both a financial and timing burden, and I don't understand this, especially when we know that more housing units are needed. We want to build the ADU to care for my elderly aunt, and we are the only relatives that can care for her. Due to the lengthy timeline and high cost of getting it through the Coastal Commission, we will most likely have to move her into our home. This is not ideal. We would both like to have our own independence, living close where we can care for her, but separate so that we can have our own space. We are community members who only want to improve our own property so that it serves our own needs. In our case, an elderly aunt we need to provide care for. And with our daughter in high school, we know that she may not be able to afford housing in Venice in the future. And we want the option to keep our family together, and an ADU will allow us to accomplish that. Thank you for your time.
Through the chair. I just want to comment on something for a second. And the reason I'm just going to say is that staff is going to be responding to these inquiries about Venice. Okay. And I want the people who are commenting to stay online and hear what's going to be said, because oftentimes what people do is they comment, they go about their day, they don't hear what the response is going to be, and I want folks to stay on to hear our response to what's being said here.
Thanks, Commissioner. That's a great point. So folks, if you can stay online, we're going to Commissioner Wilson is going to be asking some questions, and there'll be some staff response on this ADU issue as soon as we're done with public comment, which should be momentarily.
Yeah, no more speakers.
There you have it. All right. So, Commissioner Wilson.
Thanks. Well, I just want to. This is an issue that we need to address for sure. But I know that staff has been working hard with the local agency on a broader perspective on this, and I want them, if staff could address this and maybe speak to some ideas about how we might address this more.
Right, and I would just add that there is new legislation that has just been signed by the governor with regard to ADU, so maybe you could incorporate that into your comments, Executive Director.
First, I'd like to turn it over to Steve Hudson to give a response about the Venice-specific comments. Steve? Right.
Thank you. I would like to address the comments by the last speaker, Ms. Berkson, Lauren Segal, and some of the other speakers, and who talked about the difficulty and expense of obtaining a CDP for new ADU projects in Venice. However, that process and those fees that were discussed are for the city of LA's permit process, not our commission process. Our staff has prioritized processing of housing and ADU projects whenever feasible. And one of the speakers mentioned that next door in Santa Monica, that they have seen CDP waivers be issued for similar projects. And that is true. That's because in Santa Monica, the city does not yet have an LCP. You all, the commission, is the permit authority in Santa Monica. And in those areas, we have the ability to issue waivers. And thus, whenever feasible, we expedite those projects and we use that waiver process. In the city of Los Angeles, our staff has repeatedly, for several years, even prior to the housing crisis, has requested the city, and I have personally asked the city's management repeatedly over many, many different meetings, to work with our staff to develop a more efficient and streamlined process for processing applications for ADUs that do require CDPs. So I would note that in Venice, some ADUs meet our exemption thresholds. And so those ADUs can be built through an exemption. Certain ADUs, because of their size and location, may not be exempt and therefore require a CDP. We have asked the city to work with us to incorporate perhaps a focused waiver for ADU projects or some other type of a efficient administrative CDP that could have a low cost and could be an administrative type approval. That would require an amendment to their permit processing ordinance, or it could be incorporated into the Venice land use plan that is currently being worked on by the city. And our staff has asked that that be done in both cases. Most recently, we requested, strongly requested, that the city incorporate just those types of provisions into the update to that permit processing ordinance that they brought an amendment forward to this commission just last year. But unfortunately, the city declined our offer to develop just such an efficient process to work on these. We are going to continue working with the city. We're pushing the city to develop some sort of expedited process, and we are asking them to incorporate exactly these types of procedures into that Venice land use plan as that comes forward. I would recommend and strongly suggest to these speakers today, you know, I hear their frustration because I am frustrated with the city's process as well. And I would ask and strongly suggest that they reach out to the city's decision makers and ask them to encourage their staff to work with our staff and take us up on the offer to develop exactly the types of regulations that they were suggesting today. And I'll just note that I am available for additional questions, and I'm going to turn the mic over to Sarah Christie, our legislative director, who is going to add some comments about the significance of the new pending statewide legislation.
Thanks, Steve. Through the chair, as Chair Hart noted, there was legislation passed this year regarding ADUs. The law that governs ADUs is the government code. That section of the government code has been changing very rapidly over the last decade. And nearly every year we see changes to the requirements and restrictions on what local governments can and cannot require for ADUs. And so as a result of the rapidly changing legal landscape, people are frequently confused about, you know, what local governments can and can't require, what the process is, who the authority is, when are they exempt, those sorts of questions. And so this year, the governor just signed a bill by Senator Blakespear. It was SB 1077. That requires the commission to publish guidelines for local governments to help clarify how they can, how to update their LCPs, their local coastal programs, to incorporate the streamlining measures to make it clear what the process is, what the options are, and and make it as easy as possible for applicants and local governments to process these applications quickly, efficiently, and inexpensively. Those guidelines are due out of July 1 of 2026. We will be holding at least one public hearing on the draft guidelines, and we'll also be coordinating very closely with HCD, which is our partners in the housing space, to make sure that what we're recommending local governments do to facilitate this process also lines up with HCD's requirements so that there's no confusion there.
Thanks so much, Ms. Christie. Commissioner Wilson, have you completed your comments?
Yeah. No, well, for one, Sarah or somebody could, for those in out who don't know what HCD is, maybe someone could.
That's the Department of Housing and Community Development.
Thank you. I want to make sure that we're not using acronyms that people aren't familiar with. This is a question maybe for Steve or staff, which is, I know you guys are working on this general land use plan with the city of LA. Is it, and have we done, or is it possible to actually carve out, I mean, if that's going to take a long time or not, has a lot of different policies that need to get worked out, is it possible to cleave off the part that is just the ADU part in terms of like getting an update for that we can get through this process in an expedited manner?
Thank you. And through the chair, I'd be happy to respond to that. And yes, there is a process, and we have asked the city to take us up on our offer to use it. So the city of Los Angeles is unique in all the state in that they're the only local government that does not have a certified local coastal program and yet has the responsibility to review and process coastal development permit applications. And that's because there's a provision hard baked directly into the Coastal Act that provides them that ability. The city implements that ability through an ordinance, and that ordinance was required to be certified by this commission. The ordinance is simply the permit processing procedures. And the city, from time to time, brings updates to those permit processing procedures to this commission for certification. And that was most recently done about a year ago for an update to those regulations. At that time, and this could happen again, so just because the city did not take us up on the offer to incorporate exactly these types of changes to create an expedited, either some sort of administrative permit process for ADUs, or potentially even a focused waiver, similar to the process our staff and commission use for ADU projects. The city could work with our staff, take us up on our offer, and come back and amend that ordinance. A second way to get this done would be that the city could come in today with a focused amendment to their currently certified land use plan for Venice. So that would only apply to Venice, of course, but that's where many of these issues are occurring. They could amend that land use plan and also create a potential process to expedite exactly these sorts of processes. And I would just note that the second issue that many of the speakers mentioned, the permit fees, we don't control the city's permit fees, but of course the city has complete control over the fees that they charge, and they can modify or reduce those sorts of fees on their own without coming to this commission, and they could do that immediately. So I would just note that there are potential remedies that could happen very quickly, but it takes a commitment by the city.
I appreciate that, Steve. And what I don't want to have happen is that we are feeling like passing the buck in the case of this issue, but to reach out and be partners in remedying and finding a remedy to this situation. So those that commented today, I just want to, as a local decision maker myself, so I know that sometimes these conflicts come up, but it is very, very important to, and probably your biggest power is in your local electeds in this situation. So please connect with them. And I'm certain that our staff will be partners in moving forward. So thank you.
If I could, one of the things that I was thinking might be appropriate, since Mr. Hudson's efforts to date have not resulted in a change, is whether it would be possible for the commission to draft a letter to the city indicating a desire to work with them in an expedited way on a focused amendment to their land use plan and to address the fees, given this very important need in their community, and they're under the same requirements as everyone else to expand housing. Would that be a possibility, Executive Director, to have a letter from the commission to the appropriate political entity?
Yes, I think we could draft that letter and bring it back to you under commission correspondence at a future hearing for your approval, and then send that to the city.
Would that be appropriate, Commissioner Escalante?
I absolutely support that. Thank you, Commissioner Wilson, for addressing this. And just to make sure that I don't know who the we're going to address it to, but making sure that Council Member Tracy Park is copied in this and engaged. I think she would be very interested in helping out with this.
Thanks. So we'll look forward to seeing that correspondence, hopefully at the next meeting, and then we could send this out. Commissioner Wilson.
And for those who made comment today, and if we have their contact information, I don't know if it's appropriate, but we could send them a copy of that correspondence as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other commissioner questions?
I just had one more, which is related to the public access request that came in from some. I don't know if the staff recorded that or know about it, and I just wanted to ask that.
Do you mean the one in Carpinteria?
Yes, through the chair, commission, I can address that as well. So the speaker who mentioned the blockage to the public access way, that speaker has been in contact with our staff and reported that violation. Our enforcement staff in our South Central Coast District office has opened a case and is actively investigating the matter.
Thank you. I was just hoping that we could get some kind of response, if possible, on the Calera Creek concern regarding important tribal cultural resources. I couldn't understand from the speaker what the situation was there. Do you have any insight into that?
Unfortunately, I don't. I think that'll be one we'll have to go back, look into it, and come back to you.
Okay, that's great, because obviously the commission requires cultural and tribal monitoring for any project that would disturb soil in an area that has been identified of having cultural resources. So it would be great to hear back on that particular item. All right, thank you. Seeing no other commission comments, we'll move on to item 5, the administrative calendar. Are there any speakers on this item?
No speakers.
All right, do any commissioners want to remove the item? All right, in that case, the item is approved. We'll move on to item 7, the items removed from the regular calendar. Mr. Hudson.
Thank you. And item 7 is for applications to be moved from regular to consent today for all districts on the agenda. As mentioned during the agenda changes earlier this morning, there are 2 items we're recommending be moved to consent, and those are 8.5A, the City of Carpinteria LCP Amendment Time Extension for Accessory Dwelling Unit updates to their code, and 8.5B, the County of Santa Barbara LCP Amendment Time Extension for the Housing Bill Implementation Ordinance. I would like to provide some background on these 2 LCP Amendment Time Extensions. The Coastal Act provides for the Commission to extend the time limit for action on an LCP amendment for up to 1 year. We're asking you to extend the 60-day time limit to act on both of these amendments to allow for needed coordination between our staff, the local governments, and the State Housing's Department of Community and Development, or HCD. Specifically, in regard to the amendment by Santa Barbara County, additional coordination with county staff is necessary to address the provision of objective standards for new multifamily projects in order to protect coastal resources. And in regard to the amendment by the city of Carpinteria relating to ADUs, I would note that the commission has already previously approved an LCP amendment adding development standards for ADUs. So the city is currently able to regulate and approve CDPs and exemptions for exactly those types of projects. And this time extension would not change that or affect their ability to do so. The new amendment is only for updates to those development standards. And although our staff is ready to proceed immediately with this item, the housing, the State Department of Housing and Community Development, or HCD, has reached out and contacted both our staff and the city staff, and they've identified what they believe are significant issues with the amendment, and they're requesting the opportunity to address and resolve those issues. Thus, the extension of time is needed to allow the city and the HCD specifically to coordinate, and our staff will remain involved in that process. I would also like to note that our staff recognizes the importance and urgency of addressing our state's housing crisis, and given that these amendments both relate to housing issues, our commitment is to bring work with these local governments and HCD to bring both these items back for hearing just as soon as possible. In closing, I'm not aware of any opposition to the items being moved to consent, and we're recommending that the commission vote and approve this item. I am available for questions.
Thanks, Mr. Hudson. Any ex partes? All right. Are there any members of the public that we wish to speak on these items?
No speakers.
All right. Does anyone wish to remove one of these items? I'll entertain a motion to
approve move consent.
Move.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Aguirre. Commissioner Bochco. Bochco, yes. Commissioner Cummings.
Aye.
Cummings, yes. Commissioner Escalante.
Yes.
Escalante, yes. Commissioner Newsom.
Aye.
Newsom, yes. Commissioner Rice.
Yes.
Rice, yes. Commissioner Uranga.
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Wilson, yes. Chair Hart.
Yes.
Hart, yes. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you. We'll now move to item 8, the Deputy Director's Report from South Central Coast.
Thank you. My Deputy Director's Report this month for the South Central Coast District includes 3 permit waivers, 3 immaterial permit extensions, and 1 emergency permit. In regard to that emergency permit, it was issued to the City of Ventura for replacement of a damaged storm drain vault and outlet that extended under the city's waterfront promenade, which is also the coastal trail, and onto the sandy beach. And that work was necessary to prevent flooding of adjacent residential areas in the City of Ventura. In addition, I'd also like to report back on a success story regarding one of the commission's recent actions. In the Deputy Director's Report this month, we have a waiver by a property owner, Mr. Brian Guthrie, for placement of almost 1,000 cubic yards of clean sand that will be used for beach nourishment on Pierpont Beach within the City of Ventura. And that sand was resulting from the excavation that was necessary for a new beachfront single-family residence that was approved by the city under a local coastal permit. Now, the city's CDP for the residents was appealed by a neighbor and heard by this commission at our March meeting. And the primary issue raised by the appeal revolved around the trucking of that 1,000 cubic yards of beach quality sand to an inland location rather than using that sand for beach nourishment. And the reason that the applicant and city did that is because there were jurisdictional issues. The beach is within the commission's permit, coastal development permit jurisdiction. And I believe that the applicant just was worried that would lead to additional time. So the project as proposed was to dispose of this good sand at a landfill. Now, although the commission ultimately found the appeal did not raise substantial issue based on its consistency with the policies of the city's LCP and consistent with the staff recommendation, in response to the commission's direction at that hearing, both the applicant and the city committed to work with our staff and pursue a coastal permit waiver from the commission to place the excavated sand seaward of the property on the portion of the beach located within our CDP jurisdiction rather than simply truck that to a landfill. And I'm happy to report that those efforts have been successful. We have struck pay dirt, or sand, as the case may be. And the waiver before you today is for the reuse of that excavated sand, and we'll push that sand out onto the beach. I'd also like to note that although this is a relatively small project, of course, relative to preserving our coastal sand supply, it's an important precedent for future projects. And our staff is working with the city now to develop a sand and dune management plan that will programmatically address how sand is managed at Pierrepont Beach and hopefully avoid this sort of issue going forward. Commission, that concludes my report. Staff is not aware of any opposition to any of the items being reported today. And we are asking whether three or more commissioners object to any of the items for which action is needed today in the Deputy Director's report. I am available for questions.
Thanks, Mr. Hudson. And that's just a great success story. Thank you so much for all your efforts on that and letting us know about that. Are there any speakers?
And this is 9A? Or no, 8.
This is item 8.
No speakers.
All right. Do three or more commissioners object to an item on the DDR? Commissioner Cummings?
I just wanted to, I don't object. I just wanted to thank staff for their work on this. And also just hope and encourage that when we start thinking about like living shorelines, how if there's sand excavation or replenishment, they can maybe be incorporated into some living shoreline type of projects for kind of dune restoration, which can be used to help buffer some of the sea level rise and storm surge that we see in communities. So, yeah.
Great. Thanks so much. All right. Since there's no objection, the commission concurs with the DDR. And we can move on to item 9. I just want to look to my fellow commissioners and say, do you want to just forge ahead with no break? Is everyone good with that? Or, okay, it's looking like that's how we're going to proceed. So we'll move on to item 9, Santa Barbara permit.
Thank you. And if we could pull up the PowerPoint, please. Thank you. Item 9A is an amendment application by Michael J. Cecilio to a previously approved CDP for habitat restoration, public trail improvements, and removal of two unpermitted gates. The amendment would allow for the retention and replacement of one of the existing vehicular gates with a new gate with a 5-foot wide pass-through for pedestrian and equestrian users. And a pass-through is simply an opening in the gate that would be open 24 hours a day and would not have its own separate gate. Next slide, please. The subject site is located in a relatively rural area of Santa Barbara County. It's generally located between Goleta Beach and Moore Mesa. And as can be seen in this aerial photograph, the site is developed with an existing residence and horse boarding facility. Atascadero Creek runs through the northern portion of the parcel, and there's an existing county flood control road with a 15-foot wide equestrian and hiking trail easement held by Santa Barbara County Parks that runs along the creek, and that's shown in yellow on this slide. Next slide, please. Unpermitted development occurred on this site, including widening of the access road along the creek and the unpermitted removal of habitat, riparian habitat. And in response to an enforcement action by our staff, the property owner submitted a CDP application, the underlying application, for removal of the unpermitted development. And that included removal of both unpermitted gates that were blocking the public access trail and substantial riparian habitat restoration. And the commission approved that underlying CDP for restoration at our May 2023 hearing. However, following commission action, the Santa Barbara County Flood Control District and County Parks Department coordinated with the applicant and commission staff, and they were requesting that the western gate be retained and replaced with a new gate incorporating the pedestrian and equestrian pass-through. And the reason for that was there attempting to prevent unauthorized motorized vehicle access along the access road trail and into sensitive habitat areas, not just the riparian area, but the very sensitive Moore Mesa located to the east of the site, which the trail is used to access. And next slide, please. Although the proposed modifications to gate design would allow continued passage for hiking, bicycling, and equestrian use along the trail, even when the gate is closed, the originally proposed width of this step through was only about a little more than 3.5 feet in width, and that would have been difficult for equestrian users to navigate. The United States Forest Service's Equestrian Design Guidebook for Trails requires trailhead step-throughs to be designed at a minimum of 5 feet to allow adequate space for equestrians to pass through without rubbing, and the steps should be no higher than 12 inches in height for ease of passage. To address this issue, Commission planning and enforcement staff work closely with the applicant and with County Parks Department and the county's Flood Control Agency to find an alternative acceptable design to widen the pass through to the minimum of 5 feet in width. This change to the project will be implemented pursuant to Special Condition 4, which requires the applicant to provide revised plans for the new gate with the minimum step through width of 5 feet, and that will better accommodate equestrian use of the hiking trail. The applicant and Santa Barbara County Parks and Flood Control Districts have indicated they are in agreement with this and with the other conditions of approval. Additionally, to avoid potential discouragement of public use while the gate is closed, public access signage is proposed and implemented through our conditions. And that signage would be affixed to a cross beam of the proposed modified gate immediately adjacent to the step through, such that it would be self-evident that public access is available at all times through the pass through, even when the gate is closed. So in closing, staff believes this project with those conditions is consistent with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act. The motion to approve the coastal permit can be found on page 5 of your reports. That concludes my presentation. I am available for questions.
Thanks, Mr. Hudson. Are there any ex partes? All right. Are there members of the public that would like to speak on this?
Yes, we have two speakers, both in person, Jason Malazzo and then Justin Funa.
All right, each will have 2 minutes.
So, good morning, Chair Hart and commissioners. So the staff's recommendation, I am here to support, but with one modification. So I'm a father of four adult children, actually I have a grandchild now, and I'm the husband of 30 years to a wonderful wife, who unfortunately 5 years ago started having some medical issues and now is bound 100% of her time to a wheelchair. So we really enjoy getting out into the public space and enjoying the beautiful coastline that California offers all of us. And the discussion that was just had, I can't recall the staff member's name, but was extremely helpful in thinking about the Forestry Service and the equestrian requirements, so the 12 inches. So I'm really focused on the beam step over. The report, if I read it correctly, is saying it's between 6 and 8 inches. And under the Americans with Disability Act, the recommendations that are published from 2010 on the Standards for Accessible Design actually recommend a quarter of an inch to a half an inch. And if you have a half an inch, you need to have it beveled. If you go above that, then you need to have, so that's kind of governed by Section 303 and Section 404, talks about the type of ramp it should be. So it's a slope of 1 to 12. So as somebody who has spent a great deal of time trying to enjoy life with my wife and go out, it's just not possible to get a wheelchair over a 6 to 8 inch step over beam. So to me, there's a couple of options. One one option is it's just a quarter of an inch, but that may have some structural issues to it. I can appreciate with a 5 foot wide gap. So that could either be buried and that would be work just fine, or it could remain at 6 inches. You just have to have a ramp. So I would like for the commission to look at the standards that they have and how they're looking at this step over and try to make it a rollover instead. Thank you very much.
Thanks. We'll check back with staff after the next commenter.
Justin Funa.
Okay. Good morning, Justin Funa. I'm speaking today as a marine conservation graduate student at UC San Diego, and I want to express my support for the proposed modifications under the Agenda 9A. To me, this project strikes a solid balance between maintaining public access and protecting sensitive habitats. The creek and its surrounding habitats and the environment are very sensitive areas that are essential for local biodiversity and for the overall health of the ecosystem. Preventing unauthorized vehicle access is a very simple, effective way to reduce erosion, soil compaction, and other types of habitat destruction, which are very critical issues for protecting water quality and preserving natural wildlife. I understand the concern about the gate being slightly narrower than the ideal width for the equestrians currently, but the proposed design is still a reasonable compromise until a new proposal is available. It allows hikers, cyclists, and equestrians to access trail while keeping vehicles that could harm the sensitive ecosystem out of it. From a conservation standpoint, this is a responsible approach, one that ensures public access while minimizing damage to the environment. Effective conservation to me as a student is about finding ways for people to enjoy the natural spaces responsibly while promoting, prioritizing habitat protection. And this project, I think, fits that bill. I urge the commission to approve these modifications as they represent a smart step in managing our coastal and river areas. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Hudson, could you address the ADA concern?
Yes, thank you. I'd be happy to. And I agree with Mr. Malazzo's statements and observations. That was our concern as well. And he is correct that the approximately 8-inch step over would make it very difficult or preclude wheelchair access. So it is not ADA compliant. We raised this issue with Santa Barbara County Parks Department and their flood control district. And at the crux of the issue is that there is a competing objective by the applicant and primarily by the Santa Barbara County Parks Department. The step over design is intended to dissuade wheeled vehicle access in order to ensure that impacts to adjacent habitat areas are minimized. And so the problem they've been experiencing is primarily off-road vehicle and motorcycle use within Moore Mesa and along their trail system. And they're attempting to remedy that. Within that larger area, several of the other trail segments that are existing and did not come through this commission for permit approval have similar step-throughs. And so the county was intending to incorporate a similar design that exists throughout their trail system within this area. The effect, though, of course, is that this trail is not ADA compliant. And that is true. And that's an unfortunate side effect of having a gate design that would dissuade off-road vehicle use. It is possible that we could try to avoid the use of a step through. The ramp design that Mr. Malazzo mentioned would likely be feasible, but there could also be alternatives that would simply avoid the use of a normal step through and have a smaller gate. That would require revised plans. But the difficulty with that is that the county parks is specifically requesting this step through design in order to address the off-road vehicle use issue. And they've noted that this is not a trail that they believe they're required to provide ADA access on. And so our staff and its recommendation is attempting to, you know, balance these competing needs, make this step through as accessible as possible for as many people as we're able to, while also addressing the potential for off-road vehicle use. But at the end of this decision, there simply has to be a choice between one design or the other. And if it is designed for ADA use, then it would not meet the county's objective of having a step through to prevent off-road vehicle use.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Hudson. Are there any other questions? Commissioners have any other questions? All right, so let's move forward with the motion. Commissioner Cummings.
I don't have a question. I just have a, now that I'm looking at the design, I do have a question. I was curious on where the posts are with the fence, like what's on the other side of each of those posts that kind of holds that fence in place? Is it vegetation or what's?
Yes. Well, on the most relevant side closest to the creek, it transitions into dense riparian vegetation and slopes. And on the non-creek side, I'm not quite sure, but it's the residential side, and I don't believe there's as sensitive resources on the residential side.
Got it. I was just curious because I'm just thinking that if somebody really wants to get an off-road vehicle through there, if there's nothing, like if there's no walls on either side, that's really, and this is the only way in, people can figure it out. And it just seems like it really is critical that we're trying to provide ADA access and as much access as possible. I mean, it sounds like that's more of an enforcement issue. There's plenty of trail networks where it says no equestrian, no bikes, and it's like hiking only or what have you. And people will, you know, tend to go out on those with bikes anyway. And it really does come down to enforcement. I mean, if there's somebody who's riding around on a dirt bike on those trails and it's near a residential area, you can obviously hear it and alert the local authorities. And so, and I'm just really sympathetic to in an area where there is the potential to have ADA access, trying to provide that access. And so that's just one of my concerns with the recommendation.
Commissioner Rice.
Yeah, I have the same concerns that potentially the design doesn't actually achieve the stated goal. I can see people being able to get their bikes over, around, what have you. And it does have an unintended consequence of excluding or of restricting use by folks who may be using it now who are in wheelchairs or other mobility devices, even if it's not an ADA, technically ADA accessible trail. I'm just wondering if we couldn't approve something today that gives the executive director the ability to approve a modified design that maybe achieves, comes closer to achieving both objectives, but doesn't require the applicant to come back and go through a hearing process.
Okay, let me return to Mr. Hudson and ask if there's any opportunity for revision of the design, or would it just have to be go back to LA if the commission doesn't approve it?
We could do it. So what I would recommend, if the commission wishes to ensure that there is an ADA accessible entrance, is we would modify special condition 4A or special condition 4, which is the revised plan condition. And that condition now simply requires that the pass through be widened to 5 feet. And we would modify that language to require wheelchair accessible.
Yeah, I think that would satisfy the requirement. So with that modification, do we have a motion?
I would like to confirm that we'll incorporate that change into our staff recommendation.
Thank you very much, Director Hucklebridge. Commissioner Wilson?
I move that the commission approve coastal development permit.
Can I just jump in
for one moment. Is the applicant available to respond to the change in the condition?
I don't believe so. Are they? Chris, is anyone? We didn't hear from them, so I don't think so.
Okay, and through the chair, I would just note that since the applicant is not here, I believe that we likely could work with the applicant. It would impact their stated goal, but we'll work with them to come back with a wheelchair accessible entrance. And if that is achievable through the revised plans, then the permit would be issued and they can proceed with the project. If there were to be a problem, that the applicant were unwilling to work with us or required a different change that resulted in significant impacts, then we would offer the applicant the ability to return for an amendment for some alternative design that would address the commission's concerns.
Thanks, Mr. Hudson. Is that sufficient?
Yeah, just one clarification. I do think it's important to use the terminology wheelchair accessible versus ADA, which is the Americans with Disabilities Act, which probably has different bars and matrix.
I'm not sure, things. Commissioner Rice. I think that by providing ADA accessibility, we can then include, it includes wheelchair accessibility. I mean, it's sort of a park-specific term that would require for all forms of disabilities that it would be accessible. So I think if we limit it just to wheelchairs, then we might be limiting it farther than we would. Would you agree, Mr. Halpern? Or
I honestly don't know all of the details of all of the ADA requirements well enough to know how they would be distinct from.
I'm pretty familiar with them, having operated park system. And I think that the broader term is ADA accessibility. I think we would narrow it if we simply limited it to wheelchair accessibility. So Commissioner Wilson.
Okay. I move that the commission approve coastal development permit amendment number 4-22-0020-A1 pursuant to staff recommendation with the suggested modifications. And I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any objection to a unanimous approval of this item? Seeing none, the item is approved with the revisions that have been noted in the commission hearing today.
And thank you. That moves us along to
item. Okay, just one sec. We're going to take a 5-minute break. Okay, we're going to move forward with the next item. Mr. Hudson.
Thank you. That brings us to item 10, the Deputy Director's Report for the South Coast District, which includes 8 permit waivers and 1 emergency permit. In regard to that emergency permit, it was issued to 521 Spoleto Drive, LLC for installation of approximately 20,000 square feet of metal mesh to stabilize an eroded hillside slope after a surficial failure occurred that had resulted in damage to our downslope residence, and that's located in the Pacific Palisades area of the city of Los Angeles. We are not aware of any opposition to any of the items being reported today, and we're asking whether 3 or more commissioners object to any of the items in the Deputy Director's report. I am available for questions.
Thank you.
No speakers.
No speakers. All right. Does any commissioner wish to object to an item on the DDR? All right, seeing no objection, the commission concurs. We're on to item 11A, which is our final item.
Thank you. And 11A will be presented by Tori Ellen Swiestack, a coastal program analyst in our South Coast District. If we could pull up the PowerPoint, please. And Tori, please take it away.
Good morning, commissioners. Item 11A is the substantial issue hearing of an appeal of a coastal development permit approved by the City of Los Angeles. The appellants are Denise Correo and Linda Teal. The applicant is Verizon Wireless Southern California. The local CDP approval includes after-the-fact authorization for the replacement of an existing 40-foot-high utility pole with a new 55-foot-high utility pole in the same location. The approval also includes the placement of new antennas and associated equipment on the 55-foot-high utility pole. Next slide, please. As seen in this slide, the project site is located approximately 2,000 feet inland of the beach and Pacific Coast Highway. The utility pole sits within the public right-of-way on the inland side of Sunset Boulevard, adjacent to 501-565 Palisades Drive within the single permit jurisdiction of the Pacific Palisade community of the City of Los Angeles. The city does not have a certified LCP or LUP for this segment, thus the standard of review for a coastal development permit is the Coastal Act. Next slide, please. The aerial photograph shown here outlines the area of the subject utility pole. The project site is adjacent to a residential community to the north and is over 100 feet and across the street from Santa Ynez Lake, which is located on the seaward side of Sunset Boulevard. Next slide, please. The new 55-foot utility pole was installed in 2020. The upgraded telecommunication equipment has not yet been installed on the new pole, but includes antennas, extension arms, radio units, diplexers, and a distribution box. Next slide, please. The primary grounds for the appeal raised by the appellants relate to the development's impact to biological resources, water quality, and cultural resources. The appellants also raise a general concern of the project's location, the local hearing process, and their concern of 5G or electromagnetic radiation impacts. The appellant's complete list of contentions is listed in the staff report, but the contentions generally raise the following concerns. The development sits directly across the street from the Self-Realization Fellowship Lake Shrine, which is a resting place for many birds. And the development is within wetlands and neighbors a lake that houses wildlife and a historical site. These contentions did not specify how the development would impact such resources, but rather raised general concern for the project's proximity to water quality, wildlife habitat, and the nearby Self-Realization Lake Shrine. In response, staff would note that the appellants incorrectly assert that development is located within a wetland. The project site is not located within either an environmentally sensitive habitat area or within wetlands and is over 100 feet from the Santa Ynez Lake. Moreover, the project would involve minimal ground disturbance and is not anticipated to affect coastal birds or other wildlife due to the distance from such habitat, similar uses in the area. Thus, the project did not result in any adverse impacts to sensitive habitat, wetlands, wildlife, native vegetation, or water quality, and the appellant's contentions do not raise substantial issue relative to any Chapter 3 policy of the Coastal Act. The appellants raise contentions that the development would adversely affect the nearby Self-Realization Fellowship Lake Shrine. The proposed project is located over 100 feet from the lake shrine and is limited to utility pole replacement. And commission staff concurs with the city's findings that the development would not interfere with any existing coastal access roadways, bikeways, pedestrian paths, or walkways. Thus, this contention does not raise substantial issue relative to any Chapter 3 policy of the Coastal Act. Lastly, the appellants also raise a general concern of the project's location, the local hearing process, and their concern of 5G or electromagnetic radiation impacts. However, these contentions do not raise Chapter 3 policy issues and do not constitute a valid basis for appeal. Next slide, please. The standard of review for the subject appeal is whether a substantial issue is raised regarding conformance with Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act with respect to the grounds raised by the appellants. In this case, the city substantially supported its approval of the project as being consistent with all applicable policies of the Coastal Act, and the project does not raise any coastal issues of statewide or regional concern. I would note that staff received correspondence from appellant Denise Correjo restating contentions raised within the appeal and addressed within the staff report. Staff would also note a typo on page 6 of the report where the date of the city's appeal period should read November 6, 2023. Next slide, please. In closing, commission staff recommends that the commission determine that no substantial issue exists with respect to the grounds in which the appeal has been filed. The motion to find no substantial issue can be found on page 5 of the staff report. This concludes the staff presentation and staff is available for questions. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that report. Are there any ex partes on this issue, on this item? All right, are there members of the public?
I guess we have 5 people signed up.
Okay, let's start with the appellant.
We have Denise Correjo and Linda Thiel. I believe Linda Thiel is in person and Denise Correjo is online.
Are these both the appellants?
Yes.
All right, so we'll give them each 2 minutes for a total of 4 minutes.
Denise Correjo, you've just been promoted as a panelist. You can unmute and begin. Denise, you should be able to begin.
Hi, yes, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Wonderful. Thank you for your time. And we just wanted to state that the guidelines, the FCC guidelines for the 5G radio frequency waves. We feel that it's old FCC guidelines and it's not taking in full consideration of the differences between 3G, 4G, and 5G waves. So obviously we are concerned for our health. Thank you, Tori Allen, but you didn't mention that we are senior citizens that live here. Over 60 units are senior citizens, and the health of obviously risks are of major concern. And we also would like to request, because more and more people are finding out about this, we had one neighbor that was in the hospital and had no idea this was going on, and she's pleading with me to request a postponement of the hearing so that we can have an attorney represent us throughout the process. Verizon, the applicant, and the Bureau of Engineering have had their attorneys, and we have not had an attorney represent us, and we hopefully respectively request another hearing so that we can have an attorney review the materials and speak up for us. And when Attorney Sullivan for the Verizon during the Board of Public Works meeting said that don't worry because they'll move the antennas away from the building and the antennas will be facing the lake shrine. And I know in your staff report it says it's not close enough, it's over 100 feet away, but we are still concerned about the beautiful swans and koi fish and visitors that live there. And thank you for listening. And please give us more time so we can have an attorney look at it so we can be represented by an attorney. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Linda Thiel. Turn the
You'll
mic
need
on.
To push the button on the mic. Just pull it down to your, you can pull it right down. Okay.
Linda Teely, 501 Palisades Drive. I'm going to do this in reverse order because of the staff report that was just done. Staff report. My appeal. They're tabbed if you want to look at it. My appeal reads, under G, grounds for appeal. I am appealing due to the fact that the city presented in all notifications five agenda items for all public hearings, but they only presented agenda items 2 to 5 in the public hearings and had completed item number 1 2 or more years prior to May 2nd of 2023 without any public hearings, and that is no public hearings, permits, or Coastal Commission approval. I am asking you to withdraw this appeals report, the staff report, because that is not in your report. They've only chosen the items that were away from that and didn't put that in the report, and that is the most important part of this report. Where I was going to start is that there are two things that are very important here. Number one is the agenda. There are five items on the agenda. Number one, replacement of the power pole. That item was never discussed. The power pole had been put in 2 to 3 years prior, which brings me to the question of why did Verizon have DWP put in the power pole 2 to 3 years prior? And it takes me back to the first meeting of the public hearing, which was really the second meeting. The first meeting never happened because they delivered notice the day before the meeting, so they had to redo it. So the second meeting is really the first meeting. In an off-record comment, the city...
Your time has expired.
So you don't want to hear.
I do. Generally, the appellant has 3 minutes total, and together
the gentleman
had 4 minutes.
You gave someone 4 minutes, and you listened to the man with the wheelchair, and you don't want to hear.
Ma'am, how much
what
time do you
city...
need to complete your comments rather than Pardon? Engage? How much additional time do you need?
Quickly.
Okay.
The off-record comment from the city employee who was our liaison said, Verizon had to put the pole in when they did because there was new law coming into effect and they wouldn't be able to get the power pole in. I'm asking you to do two things. Withdraw your staff report and redo it correctly and research what laws were coming into effect that caused Verizon to erect the pole when they did 3 years prior to the first public hearing.
Okay, thank you very much.
Really appreciate it.
All right, do we have the applicant?
We have Kevin Sullivan, I believe from the Department of Transportation, and Lauren Rhodes from the City of LA on the line available for questions.
Yes. Good morning, Chair and members of the Commission. Kevin Sullivan for Verizon Wireless. The appeal of the CDP for Verizon's replacement project does not raise any substantial issues under the Coastal Act and should be denied for all of the reasons stated in the detailed staff report. For context, Verizon's project replaces an existing City of LA utility pole and existing and operational Verizon antennas and other equipment that have been in this same place and location in the public right-of-way adjacent to Sunset Boulevard for decades. So this is not anything new that we're introducing into the area. We're just upgrading our facilities to provide technologically current capabilities and services to wireless customers. The replacement project meets all applicable Coastal Act provisions and all city codes and regulations. The project also fully complies with all federal health safety regulations and conditions with respect to radio frequency energy levels. The project site does not have any sensitive habitat on it. It doesn't have any cultural or historical resources existing in this small footprint area, and the project location is not going to indirectly impact any of those types of resources. There will be no adverse water quality impacts resulting from the replacement project. Again, we're dealing with a very small footprint of just replacing a utility pole in the public right-of-way. So based on that, Verizon asks that the commission deny the appeal and approve staff's recommendations and findings that are in the staff report, and I can answer any questions.
Thank you. Just to clarify, we're determining whether it's a substantial issue. It's only after there would be a final substantial issue that the commission would conduct a hearing, a de novo hearing on the appeal. Recommendation is for no substantial issue, just to clarify. Thank you for your comments. Right. Next speaker.
And then Lauren Rhodes, did you wish to speak or are you available for questions?
Hi, good morning, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Lauren Rhodes. I'm from the City of Los Angeles Department of Public Works, Bureau of Engineering. I am available for questions.
Thank you. Any other speakers?
And then we had the two other speakers, the Mary Frances Correjo and then Marie Correjo.
Are they qualified speakers?
I believe this is NSI and there's...
Okay, so please bring them forward then.
Everyone's Thank qualified. You. Mary Frances Correjo, and you're on a phone. You can unmute now. I'll try the other one as well. You can unmute on a phone by dialing star six.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hi, we can hear you. Please proceed.
Okay. My name is Mary Frances Correjo. I am 88 years old, and we do not want the 5G cell pole in our front yard. I am a homeowner here for 24 years, 20 of which were with my husband who died in 2020. The concern of the RF EMF waves on our health and our electromagnetic sensitivity to me and our community of neighbors, over 60 of us, vulnerable senior citizens. We are disappointed your staff report is in the favor of the 5G pole being here, as it also affects the aquatic life, birds, and the thousands of visitors at the Lake Shrine across from us. Please give us more time so we can have an attorney review our case and represent us. Verizon and the LA City has their attorneys, and we need our attorney also. We request another hearing on a future date with an attorney to represent us. Thank you.
And we also want to say that this is affordable housing under the Los Angeles Housing Authority. And we want to verify that you all know that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then was that Marie Correjo as well?
Thank you.
Okay, was that your comment?
I think we heard from both of them. Is that correct?
I think so. Yes.
Marie's not here.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Does that conclude public comment?
Yes. No more speakers.
All right. Bringing it back to staff for any responses.
Hey, Dori Ellen is going to start us off, and then I may add a few closing comments.
All right.
I would just like to note that the staff report did address all contentions raised in both appeals, including the contentions regarding the local hearing process with the City of Los Angeles Bureau of Engineering Department and Public Works. However, the public hearing concerns do not raise Chapter 3 policy issues and therefore did not constitute valid grounds for an appeal, so it was not further discussed in the staff report. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Hudson?
Yes, thank you. Just to wrap up, as Ms. Swiestack noted in her presentation, we haven't identified any potential Chapter 3 or Coastal Act resource issues related to the development and don't believe that the project raises a substantial issue. The primary concern by the speakers today revolves around their concerns about radio frequency emissions and potential impacts. And I would just note that under federal law, we're preempted from addressing radio frequency emissions from these sorts of facilities. So the U.S. Code states no state or local government or instrumentality thereof may regulate the placement, construction, and modification of personal wireless service facilities on the basis of the environmental effects of radio frequency emissions to the extent that such facilities comply with the FCC's regulations concerning such emissions. In this case, the project does comply with FCC regulations, and we don't believe that we have the ability to address the issue regarding radio frequency emissions. And so with that, I'll just note that we are available for questions, and that'll conclude our responses.
Thanks so much, Mr. Hudson. All right, bringing it back to the commission, Commissioner Bochco.
I'll make the motion, Madam Chair. I move that the commission determine that appeal number A5PPL24007 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeals have been filed under section 30603 of the Coastal Act, and I'm recommending a yes vote.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion, a second. Any other discussion? All right, is there any opposition to unanimous approval of the motion? That the item raises no substantial issue. Seeing none, no substantial issue is found. All right, that's our final item. Unless anyone has anything else they'd like to add, our next meeting will be November 13th to 15th in San Francisco, and look forward to seeing everybody there. I want to recognize our great team of AGP. They dealt with a lot here, and you guys really came through. Thank you so much to all of you, to our staff for all of their work, and all of our commissioners. Thanks so much. See you next month.